Our reading this morning is by Reverend Aisha Ansano, a friend of mine, who wrote The Flawed Understanding of Martin Luther King, Jr. The Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. was a radical. He was called the most dangerous man in America by the FBI and had a 17,000 FBI file, page FBI file, at the time of his death. It wasn't just KKK members or those in positions of power who disagreed with him or hated him. As Cornel West explains in his book, The Radical King, by the time of King's death, most of the country didn't like him. There was intense FBI pressure, including even attempts to make him commit suicide. West reminds us the black civil rights leadership was trashing him, the white establishment had rejected him, the young black revolutionaries were dismissing him. Over the course of his life, King was not a man who was loved by most. In fact, he was even hated by a select few. He was an incredibly malign man by the time he died. And yet, Reverend Ansano says, we never talk about that. Instead, we praise and honor him and hold him up as the highest standard of the struggle for justice. Sometimes we as a society measure all who struggle for justice against Dr. King, but not against who he actually was. We measure those who struggle for justice against who we have decided Dr. King was, a sanitized version of the actual man. As a society, we can tell activists that their protests are too unruly, their demands too harsh, their voices too strident, their methods too stringent. We have decided that as a society that there is one way to struggle for justice, and it's the way we like to imagine Dr. King struggled for justice, even though maybe it's not the way he actually did. In the summer of 2016, protesters took to the streets in our country, condemning police brutality and proclaiming that Black Lives Matter. As has happened over and over again with these sorts of protests, many people criticize their methods and tactics. In a press conference, the Atlanta mayor, Kasim Reed, stated, "Dr. King would never take a freeway." Anyone remember the powerful thing King organized, the marches from Selma to Montgomery? The ones that entailed several hundred people, even children, walking down a highway and crossing a bridge, blocking cars from being able to drive on it. The flawed understanding of King is everywhere and has seeped into our society's understanding of what is acceptable or appropriate in the struggle for racial justice. A second reading. I'm going to be honest enough to tell you that I'm worried about America. I'm worried about our nation because it's sick with racism still. Our nation is sick with militarism. Any nation that spends some $70 or $80 billion on military pursuits is headed towards its spiritual doom and is sick with excessive materialism. So because there is something wrong, our struggle must continue. Now, in spite of the fact that I'm worried about America, I always maintain hope. I want to talk about the meaning of hope. And if there's any one thing that the church must do, is to keep the flame of hope burning. The church is somewhat of the custodian of hopefulness. And when everyone else loses hope, when other institutions lose hope, the church is that one institution that must keep hope alive. A lot of people feel that hope is optimism. I must distinguish between magic hope and realistic hope. Now, magic hope is sheer optimism. It is the notion that tomorrow everything will be all right. That's magic hope. Now, the thing that's wrong with that view is that the insensitivity to the possibility of tragedy. Tomorrow everything may not be all right. Change is not always for the best. And so optimism is not genuine hope. Now, realistic hope is based on a willingness to face the risk of failure and embrace an in spite of quality. That's realistic hope. Genuine hope involves the recognition that what is hoped for is in some sense already present. It's not present in the sense that it is not fulfilled, but what you really hope for is present in the sense that it's inside you, as a power that drives you to fulfill that hope. Let me illustrate this a bit more. Some people, I hope all of you here, hope for peace. I do. Peace is not here. War in Vietnam, the Middle East crisis. So peace is not here. It's not fulfilled, but peace is here in the sense that it is in those persons as a power that drives them to seek to make a peace a reality. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in his Meaning of Hope sermon in 1967. So I've been away from this lectern for what feels like a while, since December 1st. Then I was unmarried, we were in a different decade, and it is 2020, a new year. And our theme for January is integrity. In preparation for today, I read a newer volume of King's manuscripts, the same one that Reverend Ansano spoke about in her reading, which was edited and introduced by Dr. Cornel West. And West sums up how integrity lived within Dr. King. He refused to sell his soul for a mess of pottage. He refused to silence his voice in his quest for unarmed truth and unconditional love. He was frequently shunned by, ignored by white ministers, including those sympathetic on a superficial level to the causes of civil rights, for being controversial or too much too soon. And even some of his black clergy contemporaries would avoid his invitations to join him in partnership in front of fire hoses or police dogs and the further subjugation of his ministries and his associates. King replied, "What you're saying might get you a foundation grant, but it won't get you into the kingdom of truth. There are rewards given to those who play it safe, who refuse danger, who pull back from honesty. Living outside of integrity can be compensated in one form as it harms in many others." Holy One, may the words we preach never sacrifice truth for easy return. Never wash over the suffering of our world for personal gain or expediency. May how we set forth our own voices be toward where the spirit of justice leads, where freedom and mercy expand, rather than whether we will be liked or overlooked. King preaches in The Other America, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when we must take a position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but one must take it because it is right. Cornel West and our reading this morning both argue through this curating of King's manuscripts that most of us did not know the radical Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Most of us today receive, or more likely could only perceive, a sanitized version. Though the FBI and the US government knew the radical King in some ways. December 1955, Rosa Parks has been arrested for refusing to vacate her seat on a city bus to make way for a white person in Montgomery, Alabama, and the bus boycott was born. A mass meeting is held at the Holt Street Baptist Church. The Montgomery Improvement Association is formed that day, and Dr. King becomes president. And that's when the FBI that month began to monitor Dr. King. The next month, he received threatening phone calls, and on the 30th of January of that next year, his home bombed. This was all a year before his first national address, Give Us the Ballot, in which he had the audacity to claim that the promises of Brown versus Board of Education should be fulfilled and the right to vote for Black Americans be secured, registrations respected, and votes counted. Du Bois, whose philosophy guided King, said in our chalice lighting, "The prayer of our souls is a petition for persistence. Persistence in filling up the jails and emptying the buses and registering the voters and respecting the laborers and saying no to war is a threat to a system that is relying upon the wreckage of human life and power over other people." King was dangerous to empire, dangerous for the war machinery of this country, which we live with and within today, dangerous for the policing that brutalizes communities, which we live with and under today. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is not a day to remember Dr. King's assassination and death and what came after, but his birthday, to celebrate his life. Even as ourselves, we have got some difficult days ahead. Still. How might we honor his life by being dangerous as Unitarian Universalists? Our fifth UU principle includes this right of conscience. It means that we have the innate ability, that hope within us, given to us through our physiology and our spiritual capacity as humans to reason and observe in others what is moral. Now, this can be misunderstood. It might imply, and I believe wrongly, that there's always a choice with what happens next. Right does not mean the right of refusal to use our conscience, to speak up about suffering. You don't have to preach like Reverend Dr. King to move into the arena of social action. You don't even have to be older than 12, as our story told us. We have obligations as people of conscience to use that moral sense that we develop, from which even a Unitarian Universalist is not free to ignore. We are not exempt. Once we know what our conscience is asking of us, there comes a time, as Dr. King wrote, when we must take a position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but one that we must take because it is right. When Dr. King preached before Unitarian Universalists directly, he said that the church needs to stay awake during a great revolution and not fall asleep through the social and political changes that are afoot. "Some people," he said, "I hope all of you here hope for peace. I do. But peace is not here. War, climate disaster, crisis in and within the Middle East, peace is not fulfilled, but peace is here in the sense that it is in those persons that have the power to drive them to seek and make peace a reality. Genuine hope surrounds us. Love guides us." As we enter into another election season, we can be dangerously in love with the world, another world that is possible. Unitarian Universalism itself is getting ready to be dangerous. The 2020 national elections are perhaps more important than any living memory. Without stopping the harm caused by the rise of authoritarianism and fascism, progressive movements have little chance for the effectiveness of the next generation and beyond. And progressive people of faith like us can take a meaningful role in election years without being partisan, by shaping the public discourse with a values-based framing that's rooted in our theology and our principles. We can truly UU the vote. And so I encourage you to learn with me and check out the campaign by this same name, UU the Vote, which is run by Reverend Ashley Horan, who is the UUA's organizing strategy director. And Reverend Horan, a friend of mine, I'd love to end with a poem by her. Another world is possible. We say it again and again, even when the proof lies somewhere beyond the horizon, beyond our reach, beyond our imagination. This is our faith. Another world is possible. Not somewhere else, another world, another lifetime, but here and now, for us and for all. There is no single path toward that world, no one strategy or approach that will restore balance, heal brokenness, sow wholeness, free creation. There are many routes toward liberation, toward freedom. Another world is possible. The call, the duty of each moment in history is to discern who are we and what can we bring with humility, integrity, faith. Another world is possible. In this time of despair, of fear, or of collapse, this time that is both like every other era and like no other time in history, it is audacious to declare our faith and to commit our work to a world that is more free, more just, and more whole. Another world is here. May it be so.